I know you're trying to say that, like, music creators on Twitch, we're bringing in all these DJs and people are doing home concerts and things like that. I understand what you're trying to say, but don't phrase it in the way where music has been, oh, it's been a great year for music on Twitch, because it really hasn't. Welcome back to the Gaming Careers Podcast. I think we're now at episode 10. I'm your host, Pete Wilkins, joined by my co-host, Benjamin Green. Ben, I'm looking through the notes that we write every week for this episode about things that we want to talk about, and I can see Twitch, 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 and Twitch.
Don't forget Twitch. It's on there too.
Yeah, it's been a big week for Twitch. Obviously, they had their virtual version of TwitchCon, which was GlitchCon, since the last podcast, as well as a response blog about the DMCA stuff. So what do you want to start with?
Man, I think the biggest thing, let's do the blog post, because it feels like it's been such a blur over the last week. I feel like that's the big thing we have to talk about, because there was so much or so little that went out during that blog post.
Yeah, I mean, we also have to keep on with the tradition of starting every podcast talking about DMCA.
Yeah, of course. There's, unfortunately, more DMCA stuff to talk about. The blog post that went out, I did you read through it a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I read through it when they did sort of their series of tweets. So they half covered things in tweets because they knew not everyone would read their blog post. And then you got to the blog post and I was left even more confused, I think.
Yeah, that's pretty much the response I saw across the board. And some of the tweets they put out definitely were not the best either, as opposed to the blog post. So the blog, if you read through it, it was pretty long. But honestly, my response to it was they didn't say a whole lot. They said, like, yeah, it's a problem. We're sorry about DMCA. We're working on it. We didn't expect this, and so we're working to fix that. But there wasn't really a path forward offered that I saw. I don't know if you felt differently looking through that at all.
I mean, I tweeted my frustration, which was retweeting one of their tweets where they basically said they were surprised by DMCA. And I was just like, Twitch, you weren't surprised. Come on, you're like a platform where people upload content. You're 5 years behind where YouTube was in terms of having to deal with RAIA and DMCA. Like, you weren't surprised. Don't tell us you were surprised, because you weren't surprised. You might have only had 50 DMCAs before this year, and then now you've had thousands and thousands. But your excuse can't be that you were surprised. You just have to apologize for being unprepared. And they did kind of write in some apologies and things that they should have done better, but it's just the whole thing was a bit of a shit show, I think. And their apology, maybe some people that just skimmed through it were like, okay, at least they've admitted responsibility. But for anybody that read between the lines, I think it was a pretty poor apology.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I was kind of surprised they put out a big blog post at all to begin with. So it's good they addressed it. But yeah, that part too about being surprised was one that rubbed people the wrong way in particular. I think because it was sort of pretending this was never going to happen for the longest time. Like, oh, it's 50, it's whatever. This won't be a problem, until suddenly it all comes crashing down. It's like, wow, where did this come from? We've only been seeing the signs of it for 10 years. And so unfortunately, right now is the time that you can't pretend it's not happening any longer. And we're going to have systems address that. So not a whole lot in that blog post. It did kind of tie into GlitchCon too, with some of the announcements they had in GlitchCon. I'm glad they talked a little bit about it on GlitchCon, although it was very brief, and they just kind of said, hey, we'll talk about it later in the town hall. Did you see the GlitchCon announcement, the keynote?
I did, yeah. We'll definitely jump into GlitchCon a bit more. Just on that last point, I wanted to say that they didn't, either in GlitchCon or in the blog post, address the whole deleted VODs thing, like people getting DMCA strikes for deleted VODs. They didn't mention it at all, so I don't know if they're just trying to pass it off as a bug that they fixed, or if I also saw, like, one of Twitch support's Twitter responses to, like, somebody asking about it, where they said, oh, it's because people are using third-party solutions to delete their VODs. And I'm like, that's probably not true either. Like, they're just trying to get away with it. But yeah, the GlitchCon event, I'm glad that they addressed it. Like, it was clear that GlitchCon was live and not some pre-recorded video that had happened before DMCA had all kicked off. But yeah, they kind of just didn't announce anything at GlitchCon and said, we're going to do a town hall in two weeks' time where we're going to address all these kind of questions about DMCA and about advertising and things like that. But I'm so used to the TwitchCon keynote being 10 plus new features that we're going to see on Twitch over the next year. Like, the last two TwitchCons that I've been to over in America, I've literally sat in the keynote tweeting out all the announcements, and then I've gone back to the hotel room to make a video of, like, the 10 new announcements that are coming to Twitch. And, like, I couldn't even start to make a video from this year's announcement. There was just nothing.
Yeah, and it's weird too because they've announced stuff even over the past week or two that they could have just put in the keynote. So I don't know why they didn't do that. Maybe they just wanted to keep it short or something. And we'll talk about those things later in the episode. But yeah, there really was no new big announcement this year. It was just kind of, hey, GlitchCon is a thing. And half the time, there were some cool things they did on the show, I'll say. Like they gave away $1 million to Able Gamers. So that was pretty cool to see. And it wasn't all bad. But yeah, I mean, I agree. I always look forward to new exciting features coming out. We talked, I think, last show about some of the things that we hope we'd see. And they didn't really announce anything. So unfortunately, there's not a whole lot to get excited for. But
at the same time, I would have hated it if they had just announced new things and not addressed any of these issues like the DMCA and the advertising. But did they really address them, or did they just, you know, pan them off to this town hall in 2 weeks? And how many people are going to show up for that? I don't know. We're definitely going to cover the town hall and make sure that we get some good questions in there. But yeah, they sort of bragged about 550,000 new affiliates in 2020, which I don't think is particularly surprising when we look at the fact that the affiliate threshold is 3 average viewers. You know, it's not particularly hard to hit that. And obviously with the pandemic, a lot of people have come to streaming. So 500,000 new affiliates and 8,500 new partners in 2020. So a lot of people making their full-time careers on Twitch, or certainly making some extra money on Twitch, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's still cool to see. And it makes sense with so many people joining the platform that you're going to get new affiliates that automatically get that too. I think it's still kind of cool to celebrate, but it's also not super surprising to me, especially because, like you said, affiliates for most people is a pretty achievable goal. So it was cool they called that out, and they had like the ticker at the bottom of the screen too. I think that was a cool touch, so you could see all the new partners they announced during the year. But yeah, not too much happening there. There's also, they touched on ads just a little bit, which we talked a little bit about last week too, because ads have been crazy right now. And if you've been on social, on Reddit, you've probably seen a lot of people talking about how bad the ad experience is right now. They basically just said, hey, we know it's bad, but we're working on it. And this is actually kind of what goes into what just got announced, I think yesterday, was the new multiplayer ads that came out.
Yeah, so why didn't they announce this at GlitchCon? I don't understand. It's like a few days later and they've announced this new, what they call them, multiplayer ads. And I had a quick look at the blog post that they put up about this. This is effectively where all of your viewers are going to see the same ad, and then after the ad finishes, they're going to sort of answer a one question survey, like embedded into the Twitch player. So it'll be like, the example that they threw up was an advert about Twitch gift cards, and like which design of a gift card appeals to you the most, and you vote on that. And then if enough of your viewers vote, then the streamer receives bits as a reward. So it's meant to be this, I guess, this like collaborative thing where your viewers are really in it for the streamer. They're going to watch the ad, they're going to respond to the survey, and that's going to help the streamer make a little bit more money, which, yeah, I think maybe there's an idea in there. It's certainly in really early beta, and they said that you know, it's not rolling out publicly for a while. They want to make sure that they're getting it right. So I haven't actually seen one of these ad experiences other than the example that they shared, but what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely in the right direction. I would much rather go through that experience than sit through like 3 consecutive unskippable ads that are random throughout the stream. But also, I think it's cool because it incentivizes the streamer to do it, because I think you get bits. If your community votes, you get some sort of bits for that, and then you can use that bits either, I guess, in other streams or however you want to. But basically, it's not just it's more interactive, right? Which is what Twitch is all about. So the more they can do things like this, where it's you're watching things with the community or somehow engaging and not just like staring at something that's completely uninteractive, I think the better that'll be for the ad stuff. And I get they have to make ads, right? Like, it's a business at the end of the day. They have to serve ads, they have to keep revenue coming, but the way they do it is kind of everything. So hopefully we'll see more stuff like that, whether it's interactive or skippable and not so obnoxious over the top.
Yeah, I think that it's also good that they're thinking outside of the box about how they can make ads more appealing to advertisers as well. Because obviously, if you can get a viewer engaged in the advert in some way, then that's a whole new level of immersion, isn't it? And maybe advertisers are going to pay a premium for that service. One thing that did make me sort of surprised was that obviously Twitch is so global and your viewers are going to be from all over the world. So for these multiplayer ads, then it needs to be a product or service that is available to everyone. You know, you've got to make sure that you're serving the product to people in the UK as well as in the US. So it can't just be, you know, what's the common one? State Farm. Like these American only companies that mean nothing to the rest of the world. Maybe they're in Canada as well, but certainly North American companies, they don't resonate at all over in Europe because we don't have that company here. So yeah, it's going to be interesting what they do with people that are watching the stream that are in countries where they don't, the advertiser doesn't work or sell a product. Are they going to see a different advert? Are they not going to see an advert at all? These are all questions that we're going to have to answer once we start to see these adverts come into play.
Yeah, for sure. That's a good point. I mean, because it is everywhere, so you can't just pick a small product that only a subset can buy. I think that's a good point. I think we'll see more products go that way on Twitch. There, because it goes the other way too. There's stuff in the EU that we don't really relate to very well in the US, so those brands that can hit everywhere are going to definitely succeed the most. But I mean, I agree. This is, I think we'll hear from people that are part of the ads that they much prefer this over the just, you know, the typical 30-second ad you can't skip. It's going to be not only better for engagement, but better for your brand probably if you're making it more interactive and something people can be part of. So I think hopefully if brands see that, like, hey, viewers like seeing this stuff, they'll want to do more of that. And then Twitch will develop more features like that. So fingers crossed, this is good for more types of ads like this.
Definitely. And one thing I'd love to see them talk about, I really hope that they answer this question when it comes to the town hall, is for a way for streamers to be able to choose who can advertise on their channel. Because we're getting to the point now where big streamers, you know, the real top 0.1% on Twitch, they have big contracts with peripheral makers or energy drinks. And you don't want somebody who, you know, represents Logitech to have a Corsair ad run before their live stream. They should have that control to be able to say, you know, listen, I'm partnered with Logitech. I don't want any Corsair ads or any Razer ads appearing on my videos. Or, you know, it's applicable to basically every type of advertising. Energy drinks is a big one, isn't it? Red Bull and Monster and all these different energy companies. So yeah, I'd love them to implement that, but then, you know, how do they do that? There's so many different categories to be able to do. I don't even know if YouTube does that, so it'd be one step ahead.
I mean, you want to hear something really funny, though? I mean, I stream on the Legion, official Lenovo Legion channel, and that channel can get ads for, like, Alienware and these other competitors on the official channel. So, like, that's the extreme example. But yeah, I agree. Like, if you're sponsored by this brand that you're promoting, and then you get this ad that's for the direct competitor, I mean, that's directly competing with what you're trying to do. So hopefully they can get some way. I agree, it's really complex because there's so many brands out there. You'd have to go through and, like, blacklist certain ads or something, and I don't know. But there has to be some way to do it in the future, I think, if you want to see more brands come in here and not have that. Because it is a blocker for brands if they say, hey, like, why are there Alienware ads on our channel, right? That's a big issue. So hopefully they'll find something for that. And then if they can solve it, I think we'll see more brands and better ads come to Twitch too.
Yeah, I'm sure they probably have some way of doing it right now, because I feel like you wouldn't watch, like, the Riot Games channel for League of Legends World Championship and get, like, a Dota advert. I don't know if Dota have ever advertised on Twitch, but I feel like there must be some system in place and it just needs to filter down to the smaller creators. But yeah, some kind of ad management would be really handy. But at the same time, are Twitch really in the position where they get to pick and choose how many advertisers they work with? They're probably just trying to get as many advertisers on the platform as possible.
I don't know. Like, I've gone through the experience of trying to work with ads on Twitch before. I think they are very picky about who they work with, because it's not the type of thing where YouTube is like an open platform, right? Where anybody can kind of go on and submit an ad essentially, and you can get your ad. That's why you see, you know, unfortunately, some very bad ads on YouTube for, like, scam sites or whatever else, because anybody can submit an ad. Whereas on Twitch, yes, you can email the advertising people, but it's unlikely you get a response at all. It's more likely they reach out to somebody and say, hey, do you want to advertise on Twitch, instead of the other way around. So I think there's still a lot of people that would want to advertise on Twitch that aren't already. The question is, like, how much Twitch wants to police that and kind of control their ads partners and who gets to show on there.
I think especially with this new system, the multiplayer ads, they're probably going about it in the right way, because they're thinking about the creator as well as the viewers. And really, for us in the community, us streamers and us viewers, we want those two to be big priorities, rather than them, you know, plastering 3 minutes worth of ads back to back because they need to meet some objective, like we talked about a couple of weeks ago, from Amazon to make a certain amount of money. We don't resonate with that at all. Whereas if they introduce news where hey, the streamer can earn extra money through bits if the audience, you know, interacts with like a little survey at the end. And, you know, it's really not an intrusive experience. You're staying within the player and, you know, you're helping your streamer earn more money. Like, that really resonates, I think, with viewers and streamers. So I'm actually quite hopeful about this. I think if it gets implemented in the right way and it's not super repetitive and you're answering the same question over and over, then it could be a way forward.
Yeah, I think so too. Have you seen fewer ads on Twitch lately? I feel like over the last, compared to this week with the previous couple of weeks, I've seen less this week. And so I don't know if Twitch is listening and they're saying, hey, we've kind of gone crazy here and we got to dial back a little bit, or if it's just me. Have you seen the same thing?
Or maybe your double ad blocker is like now working again. I don't know if I've noticed a lot, but I haven't watched a lot of Twitch other than really GlitchCon was the only thing I really paid attention to this week. And I shared the tweet of Emmett saying what a great year it's been for music on Twitch in 2020. And I was just like, well, I don't know if he directly said it or if the person that he passed it on to who heads the music team. I was just like, just choose better words. I know you're trying to say that like music creators on Twitch, we're bringing in all these DJs and people are doing home concerts and things like that. I understand what you're trying to say, but don't phrase it in the way where music has been, oh, it's been a great year for music on Twitch, because it really hasn't. It's probably been the worst year for music on Twitch.
Yeah, absolutely. And so to your point, both of them said that actually. It was Emmett as well as the guy, yeah. Which I see what they're saying, right? Because there were some big music moments this year. I think we saw more artists than ever coming to Twitch, like a lot of my favorite EDM artists doing production streams, then DJ stuff too. There was the whole Stream Aid thing. Those were huge. But the problem is they said that right after talking about DMCA. And obviously, like right now, over the last couple weeks, is an awful time for music on Twitch. So like you said, choose better words. They could have done a better job saying that, of saying, hey, yes, we know DMCA is a problem, but look at the whole, we've still done some pretty cool stuff with music. So, I mean, it was unfortunate the way they said that. Did you see the DMCA, the audio tweet from Twitch, what they recommended for a streamer to do about audio?
Oh, in-game audio.
Yes.
Yeah, go on. Explain it.
So basically, Twitch, I think it was in response to their blog post, probably. Somebody had asked, hey, the biggest game of the year is coming out next month, which is Cyberpunk. And they were saying, what do we do about music? Like, do we have to just turn music off in the game? And the official response from Twitch support was, hey there, we recommend reading through the EULA for every game you play, which is crazy. But then secondly, to remove music if you can, or if not, just to mute all game audio. And this was an official tweet, and it got a crazy amount of quote tweets on Twitter of people basically just memeing that. Because obviously just muting all game audio for your games is not going to be a viable solution for streaming.
I feel sorry for whoever's like the team that's running the support account for Twitch, but that is a bad response, because I saw loads of tweets. I imagine this is what you were talking about quote tweets of people pretending to like make the in-game noise with their mouth. So like they're going underwater and they're like pouring a jug of water into a glass or something like that, or you know, like they're climbing the stairs and they've got like fake noises that they're going to be introducing. But yeah, it's a mad world, and that's what I feel. This DMCA stuff, we're talking about music right now, but when it gets into video games, if that ever happens, it's going to be an absolute minefield where, you know, people aren't able to stream certain games because of even audio, but also like visuals, you know, visuals in games.
Yeah, well, somebody had gotten DMCA'd from like wind sounds in Destiny, so not even music. That stuff blows my mind that we're getting to that territory now. And hopefully those are easily overturned, but still.
That definitely happened on YouTube when there was people getting DMCA'd for like police sirens when they're just filming a video and it's a car going past or something like that. I don't actually know how YouTube dealt with that, but I assume that's probably some bad actors filing fake DMCA notifications, or just the automated system, you know, being over aggressive. So yeah, I don't really mind that too much, as long as people aren't getting proper strikes, as long as there's a way to be able to appeal those decisions, and you know, somebody to look at it with a level head and say, yeah, this is clearly, you're not ripping off this police siren, this is something in the background. But yeah, GlitchCon overall, just not enough announced. I'm still hopeful that they'll do a lot at the town hall, but maybe the town hall is just going to be question and answer and they're not really going to get into anything else. So maybe there's just not really much new coming to Twitch in the next year.
Yeah, I mean, there were a couple things. So there was the channel points predictions that also came out, I think, yesterday. And I was testing it out a little bit yesterday. That's kind of cool. And again, seems like something they could have just talked about at GlitchCon. I don't know why they didn't, considering it was 2 days apart from the actual event. But yeah, this, for anybody who doesn't know, this is a new feature that's kind of similar to polls, where there's a little pop-up above your chat on Twitch, and people can kind of wager their channel points as to the outcome of what you're doing. So it, maybe, are you going to win this game in a battle royale or something? And they can vote yes or no. They put up a certain amount of channel points on that, and then at the end, after, you get to select like whether it happened or not, basically. And then whoever voted, that channel point pool gets dispersed among the people who got it right. So I think it's pretty interesting, and it's a fun little new feature, but they didn't, again, no discussion of it at all about GlitchCon for some reason.
Yeah, so this is definitely a feature that I've seen other bots have, other chat bots that you could have in your stream, where people would sort of bet in-game, or not even in-game, but fake currency on the outcome of something. So the most common one that I see, because I watch a lot of FPS streamers, is, you know, are you going to win this round, or are you going to win this game, based on the champions that have been selected or something like that. And you know, it's just a little bit of fun, lets the viewers be a bit more interactive in the stream, I guess. So it's nice to see Twitch adding that as an official feature. I always feel sorry for the poor developer who like made this feature first, and then Twitch just takes it. It's like, that's official now. You no longer make any money from this. But yeah, that's the risk of developing for like a big platform like Twitch. So yeah, it's a cool feature. The other thing we saw was the channel schedule reminders and one-off schedule additions. Like, this is such a minor feature that I feel like, why did they announce this at GlitchCon rather than anything else? Essentially, though, they're trying to push a lot of people to using like the new Twitch profile page, where you can like add social medias and add a schedule without having to rely on a plugin. So you can now set schedule reminders where like viewers who sign up to these reminders will get a notification like when your schedule is about to start, rather than just when your live stream goes live. And the one-off schedule additions, I guess this is if you have a super rigorous schedule, you stream 3 days a week at certain times, but all of a sudden you have a free Saturday and you want to stream, you can just set up a one-off schedule addition rather than having to go in and actually edit your concrete schedule that you use every single week. So, I mean, anything to say on those?
Yeah, I think those are cool. I think, you know, little quality of life changes like that are always good. The reminders, I think, are probably the thing I'm most excited for. If they can actually send those out, that's pretty cool. The problem with schedule is that it's still so hard to find on the Twitch channel. Like, I think if you didn't know about it, you probably would not find it very easily for most viewers, because you have to click into the profile, then find the schedule area, then, you know, whereas it could be very easy to find. It used to be a lot of people just did this through panels, which is right below your stream, but now you have to click into the profile. So I think a lot of people in practice don't actually find the schedule area right now. But I mean, at least for those who do, it's more options added there.
Yeah, it'd be cool if they, if you like went to somebody's profile who was offline, if the schedule somehow showed, or it showed a countdown to when their next stream is from their schedule. Even if they're hosting somewhere, you know, just like the title of the stream could be something like going live in 4 hours, 36 minutes, and that could count down. I think that would be quite cool, because the main reason for a schedule, I feel, is when you arrive at somebody's profile on the offline and you want to see, oh, when are they next online? But like you said, it's a bit hard to find. Another change that I saw this week, though, when we were talking about profile pages, is the Twitch discoverability update. So this came to partners, I feel like, 6 months ago now. Maybe my time is just warped, but effectively, you could now, or you could about 6 months ago, search for partners' social media handles in the search bar, and it would return their profile. So for people that have, you know, like a really great Twitter username and a big Twitter following, but they don't have the same name on Twitch, you could search for their Twitter name and it would still direct you in the right place. I feel like for partners, Twitch would probably help most of you get the official username anyway, but this has now rolled out, I think, to affiliates. I'm not sure if it's site-wide or if it's just to affiliates, but certainly a handy update. Any discoverability update, I feel like, is always a good thing on Twitch, because it's something they've struggled with for so long.
Yeah, I mean, any update is good. I agree with that. The only thing about this is it still really favors established creators already and not rising ones, because really you're searching for people that already have an audience somewhere else, a pretty sizable one, if you're using, you know, an established social media, versus somebody who's new who doesn't have a following on Twitter or YouTube or something yet, but still could maybe search for. I still think there's a lot they can do with the search on Twitch, personally. Just looking at what YouTube can do for not only established, but even new creators. Now you can create searchable titles and things like that. There's just no support for that on Twitch right now. So while I agree it's better, we're getting closer, I still think there's a lot that could be added here pretty easily, I would think. I don't know, because just, again, looking at YouTube, there's so much potential they could do on Twitch with tagging and titles and things like that. So I don't know if you feel the same, because you've put so much time into YouTube at this point.
Yeah, it's funny because YouTube's actually moving away from tags. Like, they've kind of said that there's no real reason to add tags anymore. I still do for all of my videos, just maybe because I'm superstitious, but... You know, there's plenty of huge creators on YouTube who don't put any tags in, and they don't put anything in their description, maybe like two lines in their description. And it's just title and thumbnail and how long people watch once they've clicked through. That's really the main metric on YouTube. But Twitch, you know, you don't have the option to add a custom thumbnail, and I probably don't ever want to see that feature, because imagine the clickbait that you're going to see on Twitch if people can add some custom lewd thumbnail or something. But yeah, maybe it just favors popular people that are coming across to Twitch. So obviously Twitch has made a lot of progress in terms of getting people to come from YouTube to start live streaming on Twitch, or, you know, people that have big music followings on Spotify or something coming over to Twitch. Maybe it's really just benefiting them, because creators or viewers can now search their usernames from other platforms and find them on Twitch more easily.
Mm-hmm. I mean, which is good too. If you're looking for somebody specifically who's established and you're coming to Twitch the first time, that's nice. But the thing is, for rising creators, it's probably not going to help you that much, honestly, until you build something on YouTube or some other platform that can then translate onto Twitch. So at the end of the day, it's the same thing. You still have to build somewhere else and then come to Twitch to kind of grow.
I guess the one nice thing is it adds to the profile page as well. The profile pages do look better than they used to, especially if you're arriving at someone's stream that's offline. But yeah, plenty more work that could be done on discoverability, definitely. I think they also mentioned that they're basically getting better with their recommendations, in terms of, you know, if you've watched a certain number of different creators, they're getting better at recommending other creators that are similar to that. I think, you know, there's no data behind that, but if they say they're getting better, then hopefully they are. I still think one of the biggest issues with Twitch is like that follow-on content. It's so well done on YouTube, where you watch a video on a topic and YouTube has pinpointed the exact type of video they think you want to watch next, and it can be from any creator. And that's really hard to do on Twitch, because you side so much with the personality of the streamer, and, you know, forcing a new person on you just doesn't really work quite as well.
Yeah, I agree. The black hole of YouTube effect isn't quite the same as strong on Twitch, for sure. I think there were some data points that came out of GlitchCon which were cool. Now, unfortunately, the guy who was giving all the data, his mic cut out like half the time he was talking, which was sad, because I think he had the most interesting stuff to talk about of the entire keynote, unfortunately. But
I couldn't work out if that was his microphone being too far away and like his noise gate kept kicking in, or if it was just a poor connection. But yeah, it was so hard to watch and like understand what he was saying.
It had to be a noise gate, because they could have fixed the other stuff. Like, they could have turned up the volume, I think, on the broadcast side. But yeah, but he was talking about some of the data around, I think, channel trailers and how those were actually making a difference and people sticking around. And again, I couldn't hear what the data was because he kept cutting out. But I might look into that and see, like, what I'm a big data nerd with Twitch stuff. So that apparently is helping. I think the social, I agree with you, it definitely looks a lot better than it did before on the channel pages, with having all your social icons there and not in the panels anymore, which is pretty clean. But then, yeah, the recommendations, if that's getting better too. I think the other thing they said was, if someone watches for 15 minutes, did you hear that? He said something about they're kind of tuning for that metric. If you watch a stream for at least 15 minutes, then they're more likely to recommend you, I think. I gotta look into that a little bit more, but yeah, that was interesting to hear that metric. It's sort of the first time I've heard that from Twitch.
Yeah, that's the really impressive thing, I think, about Twitch or live streaming in general, is that retention. Like, the amount of time that people will watch a single streamer for. You know, some people sit through the full 8-hour streams, and like, if you got that kind of retention on YouTube, you know, it's hard to keep people's attention for even 2 minutes on YouTube. So the fact that people stay engaged for that long is impressive. So yeah, I'd love if they uploaded or made a blog post about what he was trying to say, because I was just watching that, being checking my internet, like, is it my internet going down? Then I look at the Twitch chat and everyone's complaining about the fact that this guy's mic keeps dropping out, and I'm like, oh god, you hate to see technical issues from a company as big as Twitch, you know, who are meant to be about live streaming. I also thought Emmett's setup was really cool to look at, but the audio was weird in that his microphone was very far away. There was a lot of like fan noise in the background. And
yeah, I mean, I guess they're trying to do the best they can with the virtual broadcast, and they don't have as much control over everybody, So I understand that piece. I'm glad they at least did it in the first place, because I think some people were scared that Emmett was going to come on for like 2 minutes and say, "GlitchCon has begun. All right, let's go," and say nothing. So at least he did say some stuff.
But that's the first time we've heard from him since SwitchCon 2019. You know, like, you would think he had a lot to talk about, and he did. Like we said, he did apologize for like some of the things that people have been complaining about from Twitch. But I just would have thought there would have been some substance, some features, something to get excited about. There was a lot of people I saw like really saying the way Twitch fixes this bad PR is just to give a better subscriber split, give it 60-40, you know, because right now, unless you're, again, the top 0.1%, you have a 50-50 split on subscriber revenue. So if somebody subscribes to your stream for $5 a month, you get $250, Twitch gets $250. Such an easy win for Twitch if they change that to be slightly in favor of the streamer. But yet, I mean, to blanket say that they're going to give away 10% of subscriber revenue to streamers, that's probably a big margin, but it would be such an easy PR win. People would be like over the moon with that news.
Yeah, I mean, because you think about, even that small little change can be massive when you scale it up over the amount of subs. But yeah, I mean, any announcement would have been good here, just to help with the PR, like something exciting for people. And they just really, I mean, they had the donation, which is good. The donation to Able Gamers, that was nice. But it's still not like a Twitch change to kind of combat the issues that have been happening lately, to get people excited about. So I was sad that I didn't really see anything there. And we got the predictions, we got the ads updates, I guess, yesterday, but not really that exciting. Even just like talking, like in TwitchCon's past, they've talked about stuff that's pretty far away. The schedule thing, I remember, was months away when they talked about initially. But still, just saying like we're working on this and it's going to come would have been really exciting, I think, for people. So I know we're going back to what we already talked about, but that would have been cool, I think.
One thing I want to say is, it from my like software engineering background, which is what I did before gaming careers, when a platform or like a website or any service becomes more and more mature, it becomes harder and harder to implement like new exciting features, because you kind of hopefully rounded out all of the features that you wanted to build when you're 10 years in, and you're now really competitive with YouTube, and you maybe don't want to leak what you're working on, and it's 6 months away. So I don't know if that plays into it at all, because they're now, you know, they're now a serious website and they're competing for this huge like live streaming industry space with the likes of YouTube and Facebook, and maybe they don't want to leak that info. But yeah, just give us something to get excited about. But we talked a lot about Twitch today. I wanted to make sure that we covered at least some other news from a different platform. So I put down a video that YouTube has like this Creator Insights channel, I think it's called. It's not very well known about. It's still only got a couple of hundred thousand subscribers, but it's effectively the people that build YouTube, the engineers and managers behind it, upload, I think, weekly videos where they sort of answer questions or they discuss a certain topic with a product manager. And I think a couple of weeks ago, they uploaded a video where they did some Q&A about search and discovery, because I know that's a big thing about YouTube. People that want to upload videos there, they have questions about how you get into the recommendation feed and all that kind of thing. Did you manage to catch this video?
Yeah, I just saw it this morning. It was really interesting to hear straight from the people building YouTube. You know, it's not this myth going around or kind of people guessing, but actually just straight from the builders. So super interesting. I think there was like four different things they talked about for the questions here. We'll go through these real quickly, I guess. First one was, do a few poor uploads affect future video uploads? So like, if you have a couple of videos that don't do well, does that mean your future videos are docked too? And it sounds like that's not the case, which is really good. So if you have one bad video, you don't worry about your next one doing badly too. You can just kind of start from a blank slate, which is super nice and good to hear.
I think this definitely, the myth sort of rose when YouTube started supporting live streaming, and people, there was sort of this rumor going around like, don't live stream on your main channel because the stream becomes a VOD, and then that VOD won't do well with your audience, and then that will affect your future uploads. And honestly, that was like a real rumor that people were believing whilst live streaming came live. And so it's really nice to hear that they sort of treat every single video independently, and they're almost not looking at it from the uploader's point of view, and they're instead looking at it from the viewer's point of view. So if they see that a video is doing well with any audience, even if it's just 10 people, if there's a lot of click-through rate and there's a lot of watch time, they'll start to suggest it more and more, and it's treated completely independently from previous uploads or what channel it's from. So that's one of the nice things about discoverability on YouTube, is you can sort of pick up a lot of traction, especially if you're targeting search terms. If you do a video that really does well, then you'll start to bump up the rankings in that search term, and then you can start to build subscribers even though you've started with none. So yeah, that was cool to hear. The next question, I think they sort of discussed about video upload and recommendation limits. You know, if you upload 20 videos in a day, is there any limit to how many of them will get recommended? They essentially said there's no limit to how many of your videos can be recommended to a viewer. So if they think that the next five best viewers for the viewer videos for the viewer are from your channel, then they can all be recommended. The only limit that they have is for notifications. So when people click the bell icon on your YouTube channel, when they subscribe to get notifications of new uploads, those are limited to 3 per day. And I guess that's just so that if you uploaded 10, they're not getting 10 notifications, and then they're going to turn off all YouTube notifications on their phone.
Right. Yeah, which makes sense. I mean, I don't imagine many channels are doing more than 3 videos per day. So hopefully it's a niche case. I think they did say that if you do series content, like a produced series, then that makes sense and that works pretty well to all release at once. But other than that, that's good to see that, you know, you can release as many as you want and they'll still get recommended. The other piece, the third piece they talked about was, do inactive subscribers affect your video's performance? This was actually really interesting to me because I have a very old channel with like 700 subs who are not at all interested in what I'm doing now. But they said YouTube is smart enough to know which viewers are interested in which of your videos. So if you kind of change topics or something in the future, then it shouldn't be too bad for you because they're doing it on a video by video basis and not so much your channel as a whole, which is pretty interesting. So that stuff will still show up in recommendations down the road.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting for anybody. Like for me, I've built a large YouTube audience now, but because I've done it over the course of almost 4 years now, in fact, here's a tidbit, it's actually the 4 year anniversary of me starting the channel today. So I'm just about to put out a tweet with, you know, my start date being today, 4 years ago. But yeah, 4 years of building YouTube content, obviously you're going to get some dormant subscribers over that time, because those people 3 years ago who really loved live streaming, wanted to learn everything about it, subscribed to my channel, watched all the videos, and then, you know, maybe they had a kid and they can't live stream anymore and it's not interesting to them, but they haven't removed the subscription, and it's not going to affect the performance of your videos being recommended to other viewers. Basically, YouTube is smart enough to know what your viewers are interested in and not interested in. Even if they're still subscribed to a channel, they're probably not going to get recommended your content if YouTube doesn't think they're still interested in it. So don't worry about inactive viewers. Obviously, don't try and change the niche of your YouTube channel every year, because that's just going to annoy your current subscribers. Try and keep it all together. But yeah, it's nice to hear that, I think, because pretty much every YouTube channel has this. You're not going to see a big YouTube channel with the same number of subscribers as viewers on every video. You look at PewDiePie, like he's not getting over 100 million views on every single video. That would just be ridiculous because he's going to have a lot of dormant subscribers. But the fourth and final thing that they discussed is, how important is external traffic? So external traffic means if you post your video on Discord or on a tweet or in an email newsletter or anywhere that is external to YouTube, and then people click through to watch that video either on YouTube or embedded into the platform that they first saw it, how important is that external traffic? So the response here was basically that it definitely does help, and it's one of the metrics that they look at. But really all it does is helps the very beginning, kicking that video into suggested. Once it's in that suggested system, that algorithm, YouTube are primarily looking at the main two aspects, which is click-through rate and watch time. So how many people are clicking on this thumbnail title combo, and then how long are they watching for? And if those two metrics are really well received, people are clicking through it a lot because they really like the topic, and then they actually agree with the topic and they watch the whole video, it's not clickbait in any way, then YouTube's going to recommend it more and more. So it's not a metric that they're constantly looking for, but I thought it was really nice to see, because I have like an industry newsletter where I quite often put my new uploads, or my Discord server, you know, automatically posts my new uploads, and I was kind of wondering, you know, does it make sense for me to push these to my viewers to kind of kickstart the algorithm, or, you know, should I let them just find it on YouTube themselves? What's going to be better for me? And it was nice to hear that, like, it does make a difference, especially at the beginning when you're trying to get it into suggested.
Yeah, that seems like the way it should be too, because obviously you can get a big boost initially from just blasting social media, say it's out now. But ultimately, it's got to come down to what people on YouTube want to see, and not just people coming from other places on YouTube. So it's good to see they have a nice mix of, that's kind of kickstarting your video initially, but ultimately, like, are people who see that on YouTube clicking on it and watching through and want to see more videos. So it seems like the best way to do it, in my opinion. It's not just based on one system or the other. It's a good balance of the two.
Yeah, so I mean, Twitch could learn from that. I think Twitch could do little Q&A videos. Maybe that's what the town hall is going to be. I don't quite know how they're going to take questions, if they're going to take them in advance or if they're going to, you know, just make their own questions that they can write easy answers to. Who knows? But yeah, I think that'll probably do it for this week. Really interesting talking about all the updates from GlitchCon as well as some of the changes on YouTube. The DMCA stuff, it's going to be ongoing. We're going to probably be talking about it in some aspect on every week's podcast. A big shout out to everybody that has subscribed to the New Gaming Careers Podcast YouTube channel, where we obviously upload the video versions of this podcast. And yeah, thanks to everybody that's listening on traditional platforms like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or the website, or wherever it is you're listening. If you do have the ability to give it a review, a star rating, a thumbs up, any of those things helps get this podcast more discovered. And as we can grow it, you know, we can continue to talk on more topics, bring in external guests about certain things, and yeah, hopefully continue with this weekly schedule. Ben, any last words?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I would add on to that too, excuse me. Feel free to hit us up on social if you guys want us to talk about something that you want to see in the show. We'd love to hear about that. If there's something that we missed, there's a lot of live stream news across these platforms. So if there's something that you see, let us know. We can talk about it. And yeah, thank you guys for supporting us. And really excited to keep moving on this show. And like you said, leave a review if you can. That really helps us know how we're doing and how we can improve in the future.
Let's give our social handles then. Mine's nice and easy, at Gaming Careers on Twitter, but yours is at _BenjaminGreen.
Yeah, _BenjaminGreen, or just Benjamin Green on Twitch. I'm working on the underscore still.
Okay, well, like I said in a video previously, the more followers we can get _BenjaminGreen, the more weight he will have with Twitter to be able to remove the underscore and take the official account. When I first started with Twitter, I had Gaming Careers _. And it took me a little bit of time to be able to send through an email. I wanted to wait until I hit a certain subscriber or follower goal until I emailed them asking. But they did manage to eventually sort it, which is nice. So yeah, let's help Benjamin on that journey, or _, as we might call you from now on. But yeah, thanks so much for listening, guys, or watching. And we will catch you in the next episode. Peace.
See ya.